Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. For this episode of Disrupt, I'm going to be speaking with Elaine Flores, the COO and administrator of Medical Home Care Professionals out in California. Before we get to our conversation, though, I wanted to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business, spends less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. We've all seen the photos of the devastating wildfires out west, the orange skies and pitch black landscapes at 10 in the morning. While it isn't currently in a fire zone, medical home care professionals has had to deal with smoke and other challenges from those fires for the past several weeks. Fortunately, it is well prepared for emergencies. Before the current fires, medical home care professionals had to adapt to COVID. Before that, it had to operate through a historic blizzard. Before that, more wildfires. For this episode of Disrupt, I spoke with COO and Administrator Elaine Flores to find out how her agency has navigated during all those hurdles. I'd like to now welcome Elaine Flores, Chief Operating Officer and Administrator of Medical Home Care Professionals, Inc. Elaine, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Bob. I'm really excited to do this. My first time, so let's have a great conversation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I mean, timing-wise, it couldn't be any more perfect because your agency and a lot of agencies out west are dealing with, on top of COVID, a lot of challenges right now. You know, I'm thinking about the 2020 wildfires, but we'll get into that in just a second. For our listeners who aren't in your market, could you tell us a little bit about your organization, Medical Home Care Professionals?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you. Medical Home Care Professionals is a locally owned and operated home health agency, home health, home care, custodial care type agency in Redding, California. Our owner, Kathy McKellip, founded our company in 1985. So we're going to celebrate our 36th anniversary in October. And she was a licensed vocational nurse who had a patient on the floor at one of the local hospitals, and he wanted to go home, and she felt that she could do that. So she took him home and started caring for him and provided 24-hour round-the-clock nursing services. And it just started with that one patient, but she had such a vision for what our community needed. You know, now we're over 300 patients large and 120 employees. So we're a Medicare-certified home health agency as well as a state-licensed home health agency for California. And we have custodial services as well. We work real heavy with our waiver program, our Medi-Cal waiver program. And we have licensed vocational nurses who provide 2 to 24-hour care for that demographic. And we service all age demographics, from infants to geriatrics. We even do end of life.
Actually about, you know, how Medical Home Care Professionals was founded. You hear that so often in the industry about people who just really have passion for caring for individuals at home, decide to launch their own business.
Yeah, she was and is an amazing leader. She really puts the patients first. She's given us that philosophy. I've been with her, it'll be 18 years in March, and she has really instilled in me as the administrator to always, always do right by the patient and help those within our community. So I really look up to her. She's really fostered that type of culture here within our company. And, you know, we're able to do a lot of things that bigger companies in our area can't do because of that philosophy.
Yeah. All right, Elaine. Well, one of the reasons why I did want to connect with you and Medical Home Care Professionals in particular is because your agency has had to walk a really, really, really rocky road over the past few years. And now, especially with the wildfires and COVID-19, can you talk a little bit about that experience, first dealing with wildfires again a few years ago, then dealing with a historic blizzard right after that, then dealing with this unprecedented public health emergency, and now dealing with wildfires again?
Yeah, it kind of comes full circle, huh? Isn't that a little scary? Well, sure. It started for us in July of 2018. in our community, we had a fire called Car Fire, C-A-R-R Fire. And it started at our beloved lake, Whiskeytown Lake, about, I'd say, 15, 20 miles from the center of town. And it started by accident, and it, you know, a vehicle was towing a trailer, and I believe a spark started, or there was a fire at that point. You know, I've tried to block it out, I think. But the fire was basically in our wooded areas by the lake. And then all of a sudden, wind shifted, everything kind of got really real and scary. And we started losing structures coming up over the hill. And then all of a sudden, more structures. And as an agency, we started, you know, we put into action our emergency preparedness plan. And just for some context with that, CMS had in 2017 announced, well, actually 2015, they announced that they were coming up with new COPs for us, conditions of participation for home health agencies. So we started evaluating ourselves and preparing for these different conditions of participation. And within those changes was the fact that they were becoming very more strict with our emergency preparedness plans, which benefited us in July. The COP change went into effect in January of 2018, and we had our car fire in July of 2018. And I felt that we were pretty prepared. So when that fire started encroaching upon residential and within our community, we were able to really implement our emergency preparedness plan to alert patients, to coordinate evacuations. We evacuated patients into the Chico area, into skilled nursing facilities. Our staff, which are rock stars, by the way, they worked tirelessly to coordinate care needs of, at that point, you know, 275 patients. We collectively had a command post that was here at our office, because our office wasn't in danger of fire at all during that period. So we had our command post here, and our first priority was identifying our high-risk patients and alerting the caregivers and, you know, trying to figure out what the best means of evacuation would be for them or what their situation was and where they would go with their equipment. Some of them were homebound. We had to coordinate with the sheriff's department, the fire department, and in the middle of all of that was, you know, this chaotic fire that was spreading in multiple directions and growing. And you heard, you know, we had employees losing homes. We had patients losing homes. And we really relied on multiple people to carry us through that. You know, I have to say our team was diligent. They were tired. I could see it in their faces. They were tired. They were like, what now? Now it's, you know, 2 miles from my house. You know, what am I going to do? And we had to reassign staff. We had to reassign patients. It was quite challenging. But going through the COP transition and the preparation really gave us a leg up for the car fire.
And, you know, reflecting back to 2018, how does the situation now, the wildfires now, compare? I think you mentioned to me before when we were setting this up that the fires really aren't in your area. Is that still the case?
Yeah, that's still the case right now. We're pretty safe. Our fire season doesn't end until December. So, you know, who knows what can happen between that time. But right now, we're just dealing with really bad air quality. I've had to send staff home that, you know, they already have an underlying condition of maybe asthma, and they're having a difficult time breathing, or, you know, they're feeling ill because of the smoke. But we're safe for the moment, but prepared in case anything changes.
And I think by this point, we've, across the U.S., we've all seen the otherworldly orange and yellow photos out of Oakland and San Francisco and some of the other communities. I just read something this morning saying smoke could actually be seen on the other side of the country. So I can't really even imagine what, you know, your caregivers just miles away from the fires are experiencing.
Yeah, and there was one day last week where it was 9:30 in the morning and it was pitch black. Those pictures or images that you probably saw on the news last week, we were actually feeling that. That's how much smoke we had. And at one point, we had a caregiver who had to attend to some business in San Diego and drove. And she said that she did not have, for her entire 9.5-10 hour drive back to Reading, did not have one area where there wasn't any smoke on her trip home.
Yeah. What have been the keys to, you know, staying afloat and keep delivering care while dealing with these disasters, you know, the wildfires this year in 2018. And then, as I mentioned in that one question, a historic blizzard you also faced.
Yeah. Having the team that we have, Bob, is the key to it. Everybody on this team has that. I will do whatever we need to do to ensure that our patients and our employees have what they need, and that we jump into hyper mode. The blizzard, it was funny because in February we get this historic, you know, winter, and we had tons of snowfall for our little town. And sometimes we will, you know, maybe it happens once every 2 years that we would get snowfall. So we get this torrential downpour of just snow. And my husband walks outside and says, okay, I don't know how you're getting to work, even in your four-wheel vehicle, because I'm sliding all over the place. And my phone immediately starts going off. It's my staff. We have people that can't get to work. We have patients that have caregivers that are on shifts that need to be relieved. What are we going to do? So we started another command central in 2019. This happened in 2019. And we coordinated. We were able to find people with big vehicles to be able to get us into the office. When we came to the office, we were locked out because the roof had collapsed onto our main door. And we had to figure out some way of getting into the building because, coincidentally, that day was payroll, and we had to hand checks out. And we got real creative real quick and drove to Marie Callender's about half a mile from us. And Marie Callender's allowed us to hand out paychecks there. So I would say it's having a great team, because the team really knows how to run the business. And the business is that of taking care of people. It's a people, it's a people business. And whether those are our patients or our employees, our administrative team really steps up, and as does our field staff for our patients. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, as you were answering, I was trying to put myself in the shoes of one of your caregivers right now, you know, driving from point A to point B in constant smoke. I imagine, you know, you're wearing an N95 if you have access to an N95 just to protect yourself from that smoke. But at the same time, you know, that PPE is also vital to deliver care to patients, you know, in this age of the coronavirus. How are those two things kind of interconnected? I mean, do you have any heightened anxieties just not knowing if somebody's coughing because of smoke or if somebody's coughing because of COVID?
You know, right now, everybody's just trying to remain calm, vigilant. We, in the office, we have specific procedures that everybody follows. We wear masks within the office. When we're, like, if I'm sitting at my desk, I don't need to wear a mask if I'm in my room by myself. But if I'm wandering the halls of our agency, at that point, we're wearing masks, and we're protecting each other in that respect. So, you know, we don't go right to COVID, but we start asking questions. Are you feeling okay? Do you have a fever? Do you have any of these other symptoms? No, we're good. Okay. And if they come to us and say, hey, I normally have allergies and I just started coughing, you know, yesterday with all the smoke, then we kind of vet the situation as it arises. Our team has, you know, in the field, they had to go from a real quick shift of, you know, wearing surgical masks to wearing N95s. And that was because our statistics here in Shasta County were escalating. And we were getting direction from the public health department that everybody should be wearing N95s at this point. So when delivering one-on-one patient care. So they are very aware. They call the night before and they ask questions of their patients, any, you know, visitors from out of the area, any possible exposures to COVID. Have you put yourself in a situation, or has anybody put themselves in a situation in your home? And we try to evaluate that on a daily basis. All of our clinicians are called on a daily basis, asking those specific questions as well. And it's documented. You know, do you have a fever? Do you have shortness of breath? All the core symptoms that we have for COVID. Now we're asking, you know, are you having any trouble breathing, or do you need any more equipment? You know, we want them to change out their masks more frequently because of the smoke. So all of those things are occurring. And so we do get a little concerned when we start hearing somebody cough, but we immediately launch into, is this a risk factor for us as an agency? And so far we haven't had any exposure.
I know a lot of home health agencies are kind of at a new normal when dealing with the coronavirus. At what point did medical home care professionals start to feel the impacts of the virus? And where are you at now just in terms of that response and caring for individuals in the home?
Sure. We really felt that when Governor Newsom issued the emergency order to stay at home, the shelter in place order. You know, I remember it vividly. It was on March 18th, and we, right in front of my TV, all of a sudden my phone again starts going crazy as we're listening to this, because we felt the shift right then and there. We had, the next day we came into the office and we called our CEO, Kathy, and said, hey, this is what our concerns are. And she was so supportive and said, you guys, let's think of the best way to do this and the shelter in place and what that means for our team. So we then farmed people out and we said, you are going to work from home. This is how we're going to function here. And it worked beautifully. So early March is when we felt the shift for COVID. And we, like I said before, Shasta County has not had a very elevated conversion rate for COVID-19. I think we're sitting at maybe 650, 675 positive COVID cases over the course since March. So, you know, we really haven't had a big time exposure like most bigger cities. But we took every precaution that we needed to take, knowing what we knew and what we were seeing on the news and what cities like New York were going through, LA. We thought, you know what, we just need to be prepared. So we did that with about 75% of our workforce from home. And we implemented the calls to the employees, the calls to the patients, and the people that were here, you know, they managed the day-to-day operations, the phones, the people who were coming into the office. We went from handing out checks on a weekly basis to a direct deposit so that people would limit their exposure coming into our office. We started doing Zoom meetings with our staff that was working from home. We started Zoom meetings for our staff so that we can have multidisciplinary team meeting and our monthly staff meeting. So our team really adapted to the COVID-19 pandemic by adjusting their way that they would operate. And it was beautiful. This team came together beautifully, and they're heroes for doing everything that they needed to do in the field with the unknown. You know, I mean, how many times had you heard, we don't know how it spread, we don't know if it's droplet at the beginning, that we don't know all of these things. And our team was selfless, and they went out and they took care of their patients. And we felt that we needed to do everything we could to support them to do that.
You know, I'm talking to you here in Chicago. The leaves are starting to turn red and brown. Fall is quickly approaching. A lot of the infectious disease experts out there are anticipating a surge 2.0, so to speak, starting sometime before Election Day in some places and progressing for a couple of months after that. How is medical home care professionals preparing for a possible surge? Is that something that you're factoring into the equation as you plan ahead for the next few months?
Yeah, and we've really taken a look at all of the protocols that we've put in place for COVID-19 and what that looks like based on what our county and the conversion rate is for our county. So we are prepared. We are really promoting our flu shots. You know, once we get the serum in, we're going to go ahead and let our staff know that we have our flu shots here. And we're really going to, you know, take a look at what we've done in COVID and just re-implement some of the more strict things, such as, you know, patients being called maybe more frequently than once a day, maybe a couple of times a day, because we did that at the beginning. And we were able to stop clinicians from going when we've had patients, families that have come from, like, let's say the Bay Area, who were COVID positive, who found out they were COVID positive when they got to Reading after a test. And so we were able to stop one of our clinicians from going out to that home and prevent that. So by doing a dual call in the day. The other thing that we were going to do is we're going to continue ordering our PPE as we can get it. You know, when this all occurred, you know, who would have ever thought that I would need to send one of my clinicians into the home in full PPE as a home health clinician? So we didn't have an abundance of gowns, and we didn't have an abundance of N95s or surgical masks. So we had to really create our stockpile from nothing. And we did so as any other agency. Every agency went through the same struggles that we found ourselves in. And we went from purchasing a box of surgical masks for $5 to now $50 for surgical masks. So it was one of those things where we knew that we had to create that stockpile to ensure the safety of our employees and patients. And we're going to continue to do that well beyond what is required of us from the state or from the feds ongoing, because we never want to be in that situation again. We had PPE, but we just didn't have the abundance that we needed.
I know a lot of aging services providers have told HHCN in the past that they had to navigate some pretty shady channels, for lack of better words, when looking for PPE, just because everybody was scrambling for supplies. You know, I think Leading Age actually hosted a virtual press call, and a provider noted buying PPE from a man in the parking lot, and he never even knew that man's name. Did you come across any instances like that? Or, you know, did you have to try to figure out what was a scam and what wasn't a scam?
Yeah, we did, actually. We were following a lot of our colleagues that were in the South area in mid-central California, and they were giving us leads on different entities. So we went ahead and we purchased, you know, 2,000 surgical masks, because that was they had purchased 1,000,000. You know, our friends at Kaiser had purchased 1,000,000. So we're like, okay, we'll order 2,000. Good, reputable company. Well, they never got their supplies, or they got them like 3 months later. And so did we. And so it was just like, we need them now. We're not ordering them today to wait 3 months, 3 or 4 months. We need them now. And so we literally would scour the internet, and we would work with the big supply companies to get on a procurement for these supplies, and we would be on allocation lists and whatnot. But there was one shipment that I recall that came in, and the masks were soiled and molded. And so we had to, you know, argue and fight to get a refund for those. But I mean, nothing where we'd never got the product.
Jeez. And it's not like you are a huge multi-state agency with a ton of resources or a huge stockpile of PPE. So when you play that waiting game or that back and forth, that's just detracting from delivering the care, right?
Correct. Yeah. We really, you know, the administrative team has this rhythm that they get into. And it's really great to know that when a certain employee needs a certain type of mask, then you get into, you know, I can't wear this specific N95 or I need, you know, something completely different, then we need to scramble and we need to find it. And we don't have the corporate coffers that everybody else does to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm going to spend this amount of money on this to get what I need, or I'm going to call a branch, you know, in another state to see if they have it and ship it out. It's us. We rely on to find it, and we rely on the resources that we have. And being connected with our state association helps a lot. And being in tune with what's happening through, like, the National Association for Home Care, that helps a lot. And being connected and reading articles from your organization and different home health lines and whatnot, that helps. And for us, having that knowledge that we're not a corporate entity and that we have to do it gives us that drive to do it, if that makes any sense. You know, we have the will and grit and determination to get what's needed and find what we need for our employees. And our employees are amazing in that they follow our lead. You know, they're wearing all their PPE. They come in, we have a little table right outside my office, and they pick up, you know, whatever PPE they need at any given time, and it's just there for them to take. We want them protected and safe, because without them, there is no us.
Just as a reminder to all our listeners out there, I'm speaking with Elaine Flores, the COO and administrator of Medical Home Care Professionals, Inc. So Elaine, you know, just in this conversation alone, we've talked about wildfires that your agency has faced. We've talked about a historic winter storm. We've talked about the ongoing public health emergency and navigating PPE scams. On top of all that, like all other home health agencies out there, you're also facing the transition to the patient-driven groupings model, PDGM. How has that gone for you guys?
It's gone. We were prepared for it. You know, for years, a couple years prior to its launch, we had been to numerous conferences through our state association and through lots of home care and home health leaders. They were bringing us what they knew and what was coming down the pipe. So we felt that we had a good ramp up for it. And, you know, PDGM really has the philosophy of how we run our business anyway. We are in communication with our clinicians and with our patients on a daily basis. You know, we have coordination of care is amazing at our agency. Our nurse leaders really coordinate the patient care from the beginning at the start of care to the discharge. So we really had just a few areas where we needed to pivot, and that was with, like, let's say the billing processes and, you know, the LUPAs and understanding all of the new ways that we were going to get reimbursed and how we needed to share that with our clinical team so that they were more aware of the financial impact for the patient. Because we always have to remember that, you know, we are stewards and we should be really good stewards of the patient's benefit. And they understood, you know, where we would maybe do something that pre-PDGM that now we're questioning, why are we doing that? How much longer? Or can the patient benefit from these ancillary services or these additional services to be able to prevent a rehospitalization, to be able to ensure that the patient's, all the patient's care needs have been met? So We're doing okay with PDGM. We have had some challenges, some curveballs in there, but we've been able to adapt and pivot and work together as a team to really ensure that the education happens not only for our clinicians, but for our patients and our referral sources and whatnot.
All right, Elaine. Well, we have maybe a minute or two before we wrap up this episode of Disrupt. Before we let you go, is there anything else that's important that you'd like to touch on?
I think for home health agencies out there, it's just, do your best. Your patients need to be the center of care. Your employees need to be a top priority. And I think everything else that comes our way through CMS or conditions of participation changes or your state changes, everything will fall into place.
Well, Elaine, I really appreciate your time. You know, as you guys are dealing with all these challenges at Medical Home Care Professionals, thanks for taking the time for coming on the podcast. We at Home Healthcare News wish you guys all the best moving forward.
Oh, thank you, Bob. And you guys do such a great job in getting us information. I wanted to thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.